Today, on this episode of the PeerDirect Special Spotlight.
What's important is the ability to get a precise estimate of the degree of lung fibrosis and to evaluate what is that. Like, you know, for me, what's important is what information can we extract from the CT scans that help you do your job better?
Today, Dr. Swegers and Humphreys joined the podcast to discuss AI, machine learning, and HRCT and ILD fibrosis quantification in this PeerDirect Specialist Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative's supporters.
Welcome back to the next part of our discussion on AI and machine learning in imaging of interstitial lung disease.
Hello, I'm Jeff Swegers. I'm a professor of medicine in the Division of Pulmonary and Critical Care and Sleep Medicine at National Jewish Health in Denver, Colorado. I'm also a member of the Center for Interstitial Lung Disease there.
And I'm Steve Humphreys. I'm an associate professor in the Department of Radiology, also at National Jewish Health, where I direct the Quantitative Imaging Laboratory.
So let's now get into your work. Mm-hmm. So your group developed a tool for quantifying fibrosis extent on HRCT. So explain to us how that came about and describe what it does.
The research was motivated by kind of this recognition of the challenge of quantification. My research mentor and longtime collaborators, Dr. David Lynch, who you work with closely and is a very highly regarded radiologist with decades of experience. I actually completed my PhD later in life, and David was my research mentor. And as I was studying biomedical engineering and working on a PhD, David introduced me to this problem and said, hey, we really need a better way to quantify how much fibrosis exists. So I and collaborators kind of dug into the use of machine learning, and the specific algorithm that we developed, the way it operates is an input CT comes in, and the computer sort of scans across the whole image slice, and based on training data that was annotations by Dr. Lynch and other fellowship trained radiologists. So we had this library of examples of what fibrosis looks like, and what other patterns, other things that are, of course, normal lung you have, but you may have other abnormalities that aren't a fibrotic pattern. So we gathered a bunch of that data, and by a bunch, it's thousands of examples, and developed an algorithm that would, scan across this image slice, and then for every location kind of say, is this fibrosis or not? And that, in combination with the computer's segmentation of the lung, meaning that we extract a 3D model of the lung, those two sort of approaches gave us this mechanism to quantify a score. So say 12.8% of the lung is fibrosis, or 15%, or whatever the number is. Again, the research was motivated by the observation that semi-quantitative visual scoring of extent, meaning radiologists kind of estimating in a 5 or 10% increment how much of the lung is fibrotic, there was already good data showing that information was important to prognosis and kind of monitoring.
Even as poorly, or as challenging as that might be,
correct,
and as poorly concurrent, two radiologist estimates might be.
Yep, exactly. But there's this recognition that, okay, maybe you can get an estimate on a single scan, like a baseline scan, and that information is meaningful. But the inherent difficulty of visual scoring means that, if you're trying to say, here's a baseline scan and here's a scan a year later, that subjectivity and kind of coarseness of the scale of visual estimation limits the ability to evaluate longitudinal change.
Right.
So we were trying to just, come up with a tool that would help us explore that avenue of research, meaning how important is it to precisely measure. So we developed this algorithm, and over the subsequent years have continued to apply it in different populations. And I think the algorithm itself, or a particular algorithm, you know, there are other researchers doing similar work, and there's, you know, sort of different technological approaches for doing this. But I think, to me, the underlying, what's important is the ability to get a precise estimate of the degree of lung fibrosis, and to evaluate what is that, like, you know, for me, what's important is, as a, you know, what information can we extract from the CT scans that help you do your job better,
right?
Basically.
And the other tools that we have clinically, you know, anytime a patient comes in, you know, what I preach is I want to be able to be as confident as I can telling that patient either you're worse, you're stable, or you're better. And I'm integrating a bunch of things. I'm listening to the patient, of course, above all. That's probably the most important thing. How you doing? What are you able to do at home? How much oxygen do you need? How breathless do you get doing X, Y, and Z? I'm looking at spirometry, so lung capacity, diffusing capacity, a walk test, how much oxygen they might need. But many of those tools, particularly the lung capacity and the diffusing capacity, you know, we've talked about this and used the term blunt. They're kind of blunt tools. Yeah. The variability between tests. So when a patient is entirely stable, when you see different numbers that are spit out of spirometry or diffusing capacity, we often don't know what to make of that. And so putting that picture together, well, is this, you know, is the lower FVC, is that really because of lung fibrosis has worsened? Or is that just because they worked with a different tech, it's a different day? And so having more objectivity and having that numeric value and a value that we can trust, I think, is one of the keys and one of the real strong suits of your algorithm.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the work that we've done over time, of course, the validation process, you know, if we have a new measurement, right, we can use machine learning or this. So we've named this algorithm that we use the data-driven texture analysis, or DTA, and that produces this DTA score that you're familiar with, but an extent of lung fibrosis. So in the early phases, when we were trying to kind of, you know, kick the tires or evaluate the performance of this, we, you know, necessarily need to compare that new measurement to the things you're familiar with, the existing measurement. So that was forced vital capacity in retrospective studies, you know, data on time to death or lung transplant, and changes in forced vital capacity over time. So we've looked at that, those comparisons, quite a bit in order to get a sense for what level of precision are we able to achieve when a computer analyzes the CT scan. And again, the underlying sort of imaging biomarker that we're after in this particular case is the extent of lung fibrosis. And the standard of care is, as you say, blunt instruments. So if you have, you know, if we have a, our hypothesis is that we have a more precise tool to evaluate the disease severity, validation comparing those measurements to less precise tools kind of makes it a little challenging at the time. And you know, we've had to do some work to gain the confidence. But I think that the things that we have good data for, we and others in the field have good data for, is that the amount of lung fibrosis on a baseline scan is a key factor in how that patient is doing at the moment. We know that more fibrosis is strongly correlated with poorer lung function, and that amount of fibrosis is strongly correlated with prognosis, meaning transplant-free survival, as well as the rate of lung function decline over time. And then beyond that, if we have multiple CT scans, we've seen that if that measurement, this DTA score, increases over time, that's a marker of both, you know, correlates with a concurrent decline in lung function, but also a greater risk of mortality.
Yeah. So that's what you just mentioned about about prognosis. I mean, that's one of the key things. You know, patients come in all the time. Okay, I had this lung fibrosis. You know, I might tell them this is very likely to progress. How is it gonna behave over time? And even though that's a challenge, having as much information as we can about that, I think, is really critical. And that's a nice piece of information, an important piece of information that DTA provides.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, yeah.
Okay. So your work wasn't done with DTA. You also developed another algorithm that looks at the probability of identifying UIP histologically. So you have HRCT, you run it through this second algorithm, and it spits out what?
Yeah, so this approach is trying to make a holistic or sort of, you know, subject level or individual level classification for the radiologic pattern of disease. So what that means is more like a subtype or a classification, whereas the quantitative CT work with DTA is meant to measure, you know, it looks across the whole image to say how much of the fibrosis is there. This other classifier was motivated by the inter-reader variability in classifying this important pattern, UIP, but also, I mean, historically, I mean, UIP was defined as a histologic pattern originally, right?
Right.
And then there was a recognition that if a biopsy was performed and UIP was identified, those patients tended to do worse over time. Over time, as CT technology developed, there were some strong studies linking the visual assessment of CT scan and the visual assessment of biopsies. So the standard now is that a confident diagnosis of UIP on CT helps patients avoid biopsy and still gives that information.
And we can take that a step further now, even probable UIP. So the identification of lower zone predominant, peripherally predominant, subpleural predominant, reticular opacities, traction bronchiectasis, in the absence of honeycombing and not much ground glass or other findings to suggest an alternative diagnosis, what we would call a probable UIP pattern, also predicts histological UIP, particularly in patients who are older than 60.
Please join us for the next part of our discussion on artificial intelligence in the analysis of HRCT.
And that's today's Specialist Spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PeerDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at peerdirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions? Please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@peerdirect.com. Listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup and just ask, "What's my Flash Briefing?" Thanks today to our guests, Dr. Swiegers and Humphreys. Join me next time for the episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.